Good morning. I am opening the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services, and it's a very unusual Saturday. It's our first Saturday to hold hearings, and as most of you know who have followed legislative action, you know that that means that things are moving rather rapidly, and some of you will probably be very, very happy when we finish all the processes, and it means that we're moving towards a closure, so sine die. And other than that, I think that this chronologically advantaged group and the group to my left would be home. I personally would be down in Eugene, helping to cheer on my grandson who is graduating today. But I told them that I celebrated last night. My son and his wife and grandchildren came up from Southern California to be a part of the graduation today. So we had kids and grandkids and took half of Jackie's ribs last night to all have a family reunion. So so you all know where my heart is really down there with the graduation ceremonies today. We're having work session this morning on Senate Bill 5527, Department of Human Services, Senior Disabled Services Division, and I will.
Okay.
And I'm going to open up the work session.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. I have handed out, in addition to the agenda, two pieces of paper. One kind of summarizes what we are attempting to do this morning with Senate Bill 5527, and the other is a more detailed spreadsheet showing a number of adjustments that are associated primarily with the Department of Human Services reshoot. Let me go over what we're trying to do. We really have four main tasks in front of us this morning. The first is to review the final Department of Human Services reshoot for the Senior and Disabled Services Division. Secondly, to approve a current service level, and I note here that the LFO recommended current service level is about 1.359860064 total funds. The allocation to general fund, other fund, and federal funds is noted on that paper. Third thing is to approve the add back of Medicaid services to survival priority levels 15 through 17. This was a reduction in the governor's budget that was on the add back list for just about everybody, including the governor and the co-chairs. And finally, to approve a modified community-based care rate restructuring package included in the Department of Human Services reshoot. This would reduce the budget by $4.2 million total funds, $1.7 million general fund, $2.5 million federal funds. And we will get into the details of that package in a little bit. With that, I would like to go ahead and look at the detailed spreadsheet that I handed out to you all. You'll notice that this is similar to what you've seen before. The shaded numbers on the far left-hand side are those issues that we've already talked about in a prior preliminary work session. And again, this today is a preliminary work session. This will not conclude all the work that we're going to be doing on the Senior and Disabled Services Division budget, but it gets us a little further down the road. So with that, my proposal is to go through this with you to look at the non-shaded numbers on the far, those issues on the far left-hand side, and walk you through that just a little bit. Number 11, line 11, is the fact that the in-home program caseload increased. This is an increase of about $4.8 million general fund, $11 million total funds. lower OSIP caseload. This is line 12. OSIP is a program within the SDSD budget, Oregon Supplemental Income Program. And the caseload has gone down a little bit there, but there is a higher cost per case. Thus, you see a general fund cost of about $300,000. Lines 13 and 14 are related to general assistance. Line 13 shows that the general assistance caseload has increased, about a $1.7 million increase to general fund. But line 14 shows that the agency is proposing some training and management actions to improve SSI recoveries and to take care of that increased cost through those managerial actions. Line 15 is a staff increase, and I note here because of caseload, especially food stamps, that's what the FS stands for. This would add 19 positions, 16.41 FTE. This is, as I said, primarily in the non-public assistance food stamp caseload. We've seen this increase in the adult and family services division. We're seeing it over here as well because of the outreach efforts that, the department has and others have made. Line 16, state recoveries have not increased as anticipated. This shows a reduction of about $1.9 million of other funds and a similar increase in general fund to backfill the lower than expected state recoveries.
Question, Ms. Britton. Were there positions added recently for this function?
Madam Chair, members, there were not positions added recently. However, in the last during the last session, the last budget, there were positions added, I believe, to increase the estate recoveries. The primary reason, I imagine, for this reduction in recoveries is that estate attorneys have become more skillful at sheltering the estates of persons who have been receiving Medicaid services.
John?
Yes.
Was that part of the SSDI problem? Was there a new law? Using
Madam Chair and Representative Bates. I believe you're referring to the general assistance program. Yes.
Person Patrick.
So how much was it anticipated last biennium as a recovery if we're adding back $1 million basically?
I would have to look at the budget book to know what the total recovery is, but my recollection, and I would ask the division, it's in the neighborhood of $20 million or so. It's a sizable amount of recoveries.
Well, I was just wondering, we probably gave them up. I would imagine some FTE and some other things.
Madam Chair,
and if we're not reaching
and
the
if
goal,
we're not reaching the goal, I, you know, is
there any reason not to take positions back then?
Madam Chair and Representative Patridge, we did give positions, and I don't remember how many we gave them or how many were added last time, but my belief is that if we lowered the positions who are working to get the recoveries that they are able to get, we may see more of a drop in this.
I just think we should, Madam Chair, I just think we should look at that as we, I know this is only preliminary, so maybe that's something we should just flag to look at.
Hi.
We were on line 16.
That's right. I'd be able to.
Thank you. Let's move now to line 19, substitute homes, caseload increase. Substitute homes are assisted living facilities. residential care facilities and adult foster homes. So we've seen, since the governor's printed budget was put together, we've seen an increase in the caseload for these homes. This adds about $1 million of general fund, $609,000 of federal funds.
Didn't we see an increase on the other side of that too?
Madam Chair.
Senator Duncan.
I asked this question some time ago, and I've sort of forgotten what the response was, to be truthful. I said I had visited an adult, I guess probably the right name of it, an adult foster care home, and the woman was saying that she's had some of these people for 17 years, so forth. She feels a responsibility, but she's just hanging on. She is losing money having some of these people in her home. And I'm just wondering, are we doing something here then that's going to make a difference? I'm seeing some head shake out there. No.
Madam Chair and Senator Duncan, this particular line does not have to do with the rate restructuring that could change the rates that that woman is reimbursed for.
Okay. Is that someplace?
But we are going to get there.
And yeah. We're going to do something about that?
We're going to talk about it today.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
In fact, I have some additional handouts that show the rate restructuring that was done in the governor's printed budget and how that's changed since that time. And it will necessarily be a messy discussion, but hopefully it'll help a little bit.
It just seemed to me,
Representative Patridge.
I'll wait till we get, I just don't understand how we can plug a number in here and it doesn't relate to the restructuring, because I would think if we have a caseload.
This is just the reshoots.
But wasn't this the ALFs, RCA? Oh, that's the reshoots for this biennium.
Right.
Okay.
No.
Never mind.
No.
Madam Chair, Representative Patridge, this is the reshoot of the governor's printed budget.
Right.
And what this reshoot should represent is the governor's policies that were implemented in his printed budget that was released in December with new information about how the caseloads have changed. This particular line item should be how the caseloads have changed only. Now, we, as I said to Senator Duncan, we are going to be talking about the rate restructuring. We want to make sure that you're all clear on what's going on in that rate restructuring.
But on a rate restructuring, just so we're clear, on a rate restructuring, if there was an increase from what the governor had proposed, then this line item would increase. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Representative Patridge, the answer is no. This only should show the effect.
This is only the caseload effect.
That's correct. That's right.
You have to show me how the math works,
so,
because I don't know.
Madam Chair,
number of caseloads versus how much it costs equals that number is what I think, but I'm confused.
Senator Duncan.
Well, I'm sure then I'm trying to follow along. A caseload would be wherever that person might be. Is that what you're trying to say?
Madam Chair and Senator Duncan, when the agency calculates the caseload for adult foster care, assisted living facilities, and they make a forecast, so that they can project their budgetary need into the next biennium. But they made that forecast in constructing the governor's budget probably in September or October of last year. Now, 6 to 8 months later, they have, they know their caseload, what's happened since September and October, and their forecast should reflect those new caseload numbers that they actually know about.
Okay, Madam Chair, if I could. And I know you're trying to hurry along, but
no, I'm not
so I can get it straight. I can get it straight. So I guess I'm thinking along with Representative Patridge. It's like the caseload
lower case
is, for example, the ones I'm concerned about, right? Well, I'm concerned about the others, but the ones I'm concerned about might be a part of the caseload, but that's not part of the repayment, right? So the case, wherever that person might be, you might be in assisted living, you might be in a foster home, you might be da-da-da, but you're still a caseload, right?
Madam Chair and Senator Duncan, correct.
Okay. Sounds logical.
This,
I just,
Madam,
depend upon logic.
Madam Chair and members, again, this particular line should not have the effect of any change
right.
in the rate restructuring.
Right. I understand.
It should reflect the rate changes that were in the governor's printed budget and the caseload changes that were made since then.
I'm okay.
Madam Chair, I will just acknowledge for the panel that I still don't understand, but I'm willing to wait.
Perhaps we'll get to that.
All right.
Senator Yee.
Can you give us an idea, what is the increase in caseload that causes this amount to be added in?
I can if you give me a moment.
Okay.
I'll have to look.
That would be part of Representative Petch's question. Using old rate structure.
Madam Chair, and members, for example, I want to be clear that these numbers reflect the governor's rate restructuring in his budget in December. But the change is the reflection of caseload only, and I'll give you some examples. In the governor's, I have actually the governor's revised budget in March. I presume that these numbers are close to what the caseload was in the governor's printed budget, but for example, assisted living facilities in the March revised budget were about 3963. This is for assisted living facilities. They went up to 4,236 average monthly cases.
4,236
monthly cases. Residential care facilities cases in March, 1,568 average monthly cases. That rose to 1,624. Adult foster care cases, 5,285, went down a little bit. Their forecast, based on more recent information, went down just a bit to 5,236. So these are the kinds of changes that are reflected in the reshoot.
Madam Chair.
Senator Patridge. Oh, I made you senator this morning.
Yeah, I appreciate that this morning. Senator Hannon probably doesn't appreciate that down the hall. Maybe I should go vote on those budgets.
You'll get there.
But what I'm trying to understand is you gave us the plug numbers for the population increases,
caseload
increases. But there's also a plug number that fits with each of those, the reimbursement.
The cost, that's right.
Correct.
And we'll get that.
And all I was saying before, and I think Senator Duncan was saying, was if we increase whatever that plug number is in cost,
you'll get
then
fine.
Consequently, the line item would go, the cost of the line item would go up. There's two variables.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And this only reflects a change in one variable. Now, if this committee or the governor chooses to change the other variable, together, it will change the cost as well. Is that correct?
Representative Bates.
Yeah.
I'll let John answer and then.
No, let me try to understand this. I think
it'll help. If you go back to the original budget that the governor gave us, he had substantially reduced the cost per case by placing a decreased cost for ELS and a couple others, and then you multiply that by the number of cases you had at that time. This budget indicates those same fees, I assume, or the same cost per case, that hasn't changed. It's still the governor's budget. But what's happened in the last few months is you have a clearer picture of how many cases you actually have, and that's why you see this has increased from the governor's first
that's
budget.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Representative Bates, that's basically
thank you.
Yes. And Representative Patridge and Senator Duncan, we are going to get to this, the rate discussion in a bit.
I'm okay.
Does everyone understand how we got the caseload increase?
Even Senator Hartung would have understood if he'd been here.
Okay. Thank you.
What was that?
Yeah.
So, Madam Chair, you have about a 273 caseload increase.
And as a result of that caseload increase, the cost based on the rates that's in the governor's within the governor's budget is $976,629.
Mm-hmm. That is basically the idea.
The
personal care, the cost per case decreased. This has nothing to do with the rate restructuring, but it does reflect some cost per case decreases. Line 21, Providence Elder Care cases decreased. This is a special Medicaid long-term care caseload, and in this particular instance, the agency is projecting a downward trend in the cases, at least from the governor's budget. Line 22 is probably the most significant caseload change, at least in terms of dollar amounts here. We're looking at nursing facility caseload decrease that generates about $6.3 million of general fund less in cost.
Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In regards to the nursing facility caseload, what's the decrease? What's their population decrease? Or their caseload decrease, excuse me.
Madam Chair and Representative Patridge, the caseloads, and I'll give you some comparative numbers. The current biennial cases through the May 2001 rebalance that we did some weeks ago was about 5,974 average cases. Governor's revised budget, 5,530 cases. This is for the next biennium. And now in this reshoot, the projection is 5,310. And this is the nursing facility basic caseload. The pediatric caseload is not projecting to change. The number of beds that are devoted to pediatric nursing facilities is pretty fixed, and they are used. Nursing facility complex medical has gone down a bit, 387 in the current biennium, 352 governor's revised, and in the reshoot, 318 average cases. So you can see that all across the board, those nursing facility cases have gone down.
I assume this is not including Medicare populations there short term. That's excluded from these figures, I assume.
Madam Chair and Representative Bates, these are only Medicaid long term care.
And this,
right.
And this being the reshoot of the governor's budget, it does not include any rebasing costs. This is strictly a matter of caseload change.
Again, correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Patridge.
Madam Chair, just a question for LFO.
Yeah.
Do any of these reflect any, are these basically, most of these are kind of pass-through dollars on caseload, I would assume. Does this include any decreases in administrative dollars when we're jumping the forecast down by almost 700 people? Is there any kind of a consequent reduction in administrative overhead at the division?
Madam Chair and Representative Patridge, my understanding is that if you go back to line 15, you're seeing an overall increase in staff, particularly. I can't speak to the administrative overhead, particularly. These are field staff primarily, I believe. But you see the net effect of all these caseloads changes. Now, it's important to understand that the staff ratios, for example, for in-home care or clients are higher. That is, we need more staff to take care of in-home clients than we do staff to take care of case-managed nursing facility clients. So, and the reason for that primarily is because the in-home clients require more case management by a third party, if you will, somebody that's employed by SDSD or one of the AAAs, than in a nursing facility, where the nursing facility staff provide a lot of the case management services as well as SDSD or AAA staff. But the net effect should be on line 15.
Okay.
Line 23, service cases decreased. These are cases that are associated with general assistance, where somebody is receiving general assistance and long-term care. The final adjustment I propose to talk about with respect to the reshoot is on line 25. These are adjusted CPI costs from July to August when the budget was built. The agency assumed that the cost increases would occur July 1st and budgeted accordingly. In reality, when those rates are paid out, they would be paid the 1st of August or at the end of July. So there is some savings from that adjustment. Now, that concludes, if you flip the page over. Line 26, we have already talked about that one, but the AAAs, the area agencies on aging, are repaying a loan,
mm-hmm.
and they paid off most of it during the current biennium. This is the remaining amount that will be paid in the next biennium.
And the loan was for?
The loan was an advance, I believe, for Older Americans Act back in 1994 or 95, somewhere back then.
Oh.
So it was sort of an advance payment, and they are now paying it back. If you flip over the page, this brings the subtotal on line 32 of current service level adjustments to $775,295 general fund, almost $1.4 million reduction in other funds, $750,000 or so in increase in federal funds, a total change of $137,168 total funds, 33 positions and 30.41 FTE. Then I would call your attention to the bottom of that page where there is a calculation of the current service level. On line one, you can see the current service level that would have been generated through the automated budget information system. I'm proposing on line three to reverse a phase out of the Medicaid upper payment limit that was made to reach that current service level in line one. I believe that the current service level in the governor's printed budget is understated because it removes the effect of having the Medicaid upper payment limit in it. Is that clear as mud?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think the mud is a little muddier.
All right.
Would you please
try again.
Phrase it.
In the current service level in the governor's printed budget, the effect of making the Medicaid upper payment limit payment was removed. So it's not reflected in the current service level. But in the governor's overall printed budget, there is a Medicaid upper payment limit payment. So when you compare the governor's printed budget to the current service level generated in the automated budget system, you'll see that the governor's budget is higher than the current service level, even though there were a number of reductions to this agency's budget. My point is that to compare apples to apples, we need to have the effect of the Medicaid upper payment limit in both the current service level and in the governor's budget and in the legislatively adopted budget. This adjustment on line three would do that. And again, the current service level is significant only as a benchmark. We will ultimately not use the current service level to reach a budget, but it is a benchmark from which comparisons can be made. And you'll see on line four the LFO current service level used in our analysis, in our printed analysis that we released last January. Line five simply includes those adjustments from line 32 that we just reviewed, and line six is our proposed recommended current service level.
It's technical. a lot of work and time to get to a recommended current service level. I know Mr. Britton has worked very, very hard in a lot of days, because when we had this discussion, I can't remember how many days back, we had such confusion about what really was the reshoot, what really was the current service level. So I just want to thank John for all of his work in trying to ferret out the numbers, because without the numbers, you can't really determine what it is that you're addressing or what we're dealing with. And I just want us to make that, because John has been working, and I know Mr. Naughton too, on trying to get us some numbers that really reflect what's actually in the current service level. And
Madam Chair, we certainly appreciate Mr. Britton's hard work, but could I ask a question on number 3 again?
Of course.
So are you saying that we anticipate MUPO to be phased out in federal payment?
No.
But they are not being phased out as quickly as we anticipate. And we are going to receive MUPO money in the amount of $40 million next biennium, and therefore we are adding it back. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and members, parts of it are correct. parts of your understanding are correct. In the governor's printed budget, when you work on an automated budget information system, there are different essential packages that are used to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the packages takes out one-time programs that were included in the prior biennium,
mm-hmm.
but not expected to be included in the next biennium.
Right.
So in the construction of the governor's budget, the Medicaid upper payment limit was removed in the construction of the current service level. It was just taken out.
Mm-hmm.
And the primary reason for that was that it was added back in a policy package in the governor's budget so that everyone could see what the amount was going to be. It was simply to make it visible and make it easier for analysts to figure out what was going on as far as the Medicaid upper payment limit was concerned. However, by doing that, it would understate the current service level as well. Now, as far as the phase out and the federal phase out, that has nothing to do particularly with line 3. You are correct in understanding that the Medicaid upper payment limit mechanism is being phased out over time by the federal government. That's
mm-hmm.
true.
Mm-hmm.
But this is an attempt simply to show what an appropriate current service level ought to be for this agency.
Representative Duncan, Senator Duncan, I'm back.
Welcome to the House. I see the votes.
No, I see it. It's too noisy over there.
Grandchildren took it out of you. Must have been.
Anyhow,
you're playing Murph Ball. And
two things, I guess. From what you're saying, really, there's no change in dollars.
No.
Actually, no change in dollars. All you're doing is because it was someplace else in a policy package.
That's correct.
And all you've done is said, actually, it should be current service level.
That's correct.
And so you've removed it over there and put it over here.
That's exactly right.
So we're not talking about it. Okay. Now, the other thing, the two senators down at this end were having trouble. We cannot find on this the OPI.
Well,
that's fine.
Madam
it's
Chair,
just, it's just awfully hard to be so far ahead of everybody, and we're trying to. We'll, right?
Madam Chair and members, line 1 of the calculation of the current service level would include the entire OPI.
It was a good question after all, wasn't it? Okay, thank you.
Right. Now, let me clarify as well. We are not today proposing to add back anything on
right.
the PI today.
We're just
Sorry.
Dealing with levels.
Yeah.
Now, and as I said, this is a preliminary, another preliminary work session.
Mm-hmm.
The final add backs will be done in a final session.
Representative Carlson.
I just wanted not to beat a dead horse, but getting back to line three, this is an expenditure figure, not a revenue figure. Am I correct in that, Mr. Britton?
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, this represents expenditure limitation that was removed initially from the current service level, or from the amounts that are used to derive the current service level in the governor's printed budget. And again, my proposal, as Senator Duncan pointed out, we're simply shifting what was a policy package into the current service level. We're putting it back in.
Representative Patridge.
Madam Chair, I appreciate your indulgence, and tell me if you want me to handle this some other time, but I just am having some issues on lines 15 and 16, trying to get a handle on those particular things. Mr. Britton, I know, doesn't have the information on line 16 here currently, but can we just have an explanation of what the caseload increase is for the various staff that are going in?
Mr. Roger, would you come up?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Roger Auerbach, administrator of the Senior and Disabled Services Division, and this line 15 that Representative Patridge referred to is an increase, as Mr. Britton said, there's an increase in caseload mainly in the non-assistance food stamps. There's also an increase in caseload in the qualified Medicare beneficiary program. The staff are people who work directly with individuals in field offices all over the state. Increases are majorly for people who are determining eligibility for those specific programs. That's where the major number increase, although Mr. Britton has with him, and I have also some detailed information. I mean, when we do the reprojections based on more actuals, as Mr. Britton, I think, very accurately said, when we're doing these projections on a regular basis throughout the budget cycle, and we do them at regular periods, come to the Legislative Emergency Board on rebalances, but this one is based on actuals since the numbers went in to the governor's recommended and printed budget.
What is the percentage of increase that you've realized, number one, and number two, what is your case load ratio per staff?
Madam Chair, the actual percentage increase I would not be able to tell you today. I can tell you what the numbers are for this particular eligibility staff, which is, again, what we're talking about, the major increase here. Again, there's increases, as you've heard and explained, and I know it's not an easy system, but you've heard that we've had increases in some areas, decreases in others. This major increase is in caseload staff who have a 1 to 500 ratio.
So,
Chair, may I interrupt for a moment? In the agency's budget presentation
right.
book, on 13.3, there are the staffing standards. Roger, do you have those?
I don't have it in front of me. Mr. Britton handed it to me, and I appreciate it. On page 13-4, actually, it starts on 13-3, but on 13-4, the standard for the ones actually, Mr. Britton was talking about non-public assistance food stamps, which is actually a 350-to-1 eligibility worker. The one I was talking about was the 500-to-1 on qualified Medicare beneficiary, which, again, I believe it accounts for the most of this caseload increase.
Reverend Patrick.
So, Madam Chair, and to the division then, can you tell me what your numbers were in that category beforehand, what your base numbers were, and then what the new numbers are in your reshoot? John, have you calculated these already? And then the number of FTE you're requesting.
Madam Chair and Representative Patridge, I have not individually calculated them.
No. Okay. Well, I just find that in a lot of these things, they don't get individually calculated, so I'd like to see what it is.
Representative.
Well, Madam Chair, I think the AFS budget, we saw a significant swing from TANF workers to workers doing eligibility for food stamps in that program also. I don't know if there's any overlap of work here. Some of those workers could be doing both programs, or is it completely separate programs? It seems like we're looking again at an overlap situation here. I wonder if there's some economies that could be obtained by using the workers that are using food stamps in one program and another, or do we have to keep this completely separate? Is there a relationship there at all?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I was looking for the other numbers, but I actually was able to hear your question. In fact, it is similar work. This was a decision that the legislature made some time ago to try to have one place where seniors and people with disabilities could come and get all their service needs met. So, in fact, if someone who is working with Senior Disabled Services Division, not only can we talk with them about Older Americans Act and Oregon Project Independence programs, but we can also talk with them and determine eligibility for food stamps for the Oregon Health Plan, for the Qualified Medicare Beneficiary Program, a whole range of eligibility programs. So, in fact, we collaborate and coordinate on policy, but the actual eligibility determination are done in separate field offices throughout the state in an attempt, quite candidly, to have better customer service for our clients.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, on the numbers that Representative Patridge asked about, I'm looking at the some of the caseload numbers for the program, the qualified Medicare beneficiary, and the one I have in front of me is labeled specified low-income Medicare beneficiary, which is the numbers that have increased. And I'm looking at the actuals, and you know, when we were doing our forecasting numbers for the governor's recommended budget, the numbers were running in the 8,000 range, although they are they keep on increasing on a monthly basis. And then in the November-December time, we start to reach 10,000. And on April 1st, which is our last month of actuals, it's almost 16,000.
And that's off by 100%.
No. Excuse me. This was again based on actuals. What we see happening here, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I know it was a rapid increase in caseload, which we did not anticipate. It had a lot to do with the fact that the federal government has made one of their Government Performance and Results Act measures, which they use, is an outreach for your qualified Medicare beneficiaries and a bunch of these programs that pay for both the premium and copay for people on Medicare at certain specific income limits. And there was an outreach that was done. They sent out mailers to people who were on our caseload and told them about the program. And that, I mean, there, for us, we spent quite a bit of time saying, how is this caseload that's been, you know, increasing, but really sort of increasing at a relatively slow rate, all of a sudden bulged? And that's the timing looks like, you know, again, that was our best estimate about what happened.
Reverend Patridge.
So how many FTE are you requesting there?
In the
specified low-income Medicare beneficiary.
Well, this particular item really is a based on all the different caseloads, increases and decreases, Representative Patridge. It's not just one that has been singled out.
Can you lay out for me, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Can you lay out for me what you're going to use your FTE? You're requesting what? 16. I lost my page.
Yes, Representative.
Yes,
Madam
you're
Chair.
Requesting 16.4 FTE.
Right.
What programs are those attributable to? Can you break that out for us?
I don't have the numbers to break them out specifically for you today, but I do. I can't tell you that they will be determining eligibility, and the major areas that they will be determining eligibility are on that qualified Medicare beneficiary and, as Mr. Britton said, the non-assistance food stamps programs.
Madam Chair, I guess it's hard for me to wrap my arms around justifying more. We're fighting for every dollar in these budgets. And if the department can't justify it, then I'm not inclined to vote for why there should be an increase.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You said that the federal government sent out information to your list. Were these individuals in different programs already, and this is an additional program they become qualified for and didn't know? Are these brand new individuals in the system, or are these the same individuals that were qualified for the program?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Bates, the mailing list they used were people who were on Social Security. So basically, it wasn't our list, it was their list. And the people who came into our system are new people to our system. But because, again, they sent out that mailing, we had new people coming into our offices and calling our offices to find out about this program.
Last follow-up question.
Follow-up.
Is the federal government going to be sending out any more information of this nature in the next couple of years that you know of?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, we're not sure, quite candidly. It still is part of their Government Performance and Results Act commitment. We do have a new administration. I'm not sure that this will be a priority of theirs, but it was a priority in the last administration.
Thank you. Representative Patridge.
So you already have 16,000 people on the rolls right now, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Patridge, we have... was that the number for this particular program? Yes.
That's what the
number. That was the actuals, yes.
Okay. And the current amount of people you have was able to put those people on the rolls, correct?
Yes.
So what are you anticipating that you're going to need these additional bodies for to do eligibility if you don't anticipate anything in the future, as Representative Bates indicated?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Patridge, we are, in fact, projecting that there will be a continued increase in the program based on actuals. Madam Chair, Representative Patridge, this is something we do all the time. It's not science, but we basically are looking at your actuals and we keep on adjusting. If in fact we see this number going down, we'll be back at an emergency board at a rebalance with a proposal that reduces our projected numbers.
I have a question. How frequently do you determine eligibility for an individual? Once you've determined eligibility, what happens?
Madam Chair, eligibility programs usually are on a yearly basis.
On a yearly basis?
Yes.
So once the person has been determined, the senior has been determined, then you don't revisit, you revisit it a year.
Annually.
Senator, you have a question.
I have a question. Madam Chair, how do other states, what are other states' staff to client ratio?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, I'd have to get you that information. I can't tell you right offhand.
Mr. Britton, I believe, has some information that can shed some light on this.
Madam Chair and members, I'm digging through my notebook, and I do have the caseload changes from the governor's cases to the reshoot cases, the various amounts of FTE that were, if you will, earned by virtue of those changes. Again, we can, and it lays out the cases and caseloads. We could make copies of this for you if you'd like to take a look at this.
There's real interest in this. So would you make copies of those for for us,
Madam Chair? There's certain error or no error rate that every state has to achieve. What is that rate?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, there's not a specific error rate or a quality control in this program like there is in the food stamp program.
There is not. Mm-hmm. But you're going to get the information about how, what is the management staff to...
The client to staff ratio?
For other states.
We certainly will look at that, Senator Yee. You know, different states do it different ways, but we certainly will get to work on it.
Well, as long as Madam, as long as you meet the federal requirements, that would be the standard.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, the federal government doesn't require any specific standard. What they expect, of course, is that we will, in fact, do this eligibility determination in a timely manner, and we've never had any issue from the federal government on this program, on eligibility, on timeliness, or accuracy.
President Patridge.
Madam Chair, because this is a preliminary budget discussion, I'm willing to move
forward. You're
willing
to move forward on
it? At this particular point in time, the department's going to have to come back and justify to me, either in my office or to members of this committee, as to why these particular pieces need to be in the budget.
Mr. Wunderbaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Britton returns. We will... and I think he's probably finished with that. I would like to entertain a motion to move the recommended current service level.
Just tells you what
change we have to do.
Not better numbers we're able to calculate.
We have real numbers now to look at. I can show you how changes. And they do it, I think they do it 4 times in by number. Three times. I was wondering what they do because it never seems to go down anywhere.
If you go working, did I ask you to work with the FD on the performance measure?
Yes, I worked with John, and I asked John to give them a handwritten draft.
I will make a note to remind myself to ask John to give that to us. We'll be at ease for just about a minute or two while John is going to get some copies.